Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on the tack...
Nope. On the attack. You don't want that.
Right before we went live, Justin said, Alex needs a win, and this is not it. I gotta be honest. But we're gonna talk about a bunch
of... Another L for the A, man.
Take another L and just roll it with it.
As I always do.
I know. I love the moment when you were like, oh, we're gonna start over, and we were like, nope, we're gonna keep going.
It's a dumb enough mistake that I don't mind just putting it out there on the old internet.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, we're gonna talk about a bunch of new comic books that have come out this week, and one older comic book. This was a recommendation from Crisp Espinet. I did it again. Christopher.
God, you're killing it.
Oh, my God. Look at Pete laughing it up. Oh, I love it.
That's amazing.
We're going to talk about Silver Surfer Requiem by JMS and Asad Ribic. At the end of the show, if you would like to request something for us to review, do it in the Apple Podcast comments. Leave us a rating and a comment, and we'll get on that. But let's kick it off with the new stuff first. The Variants, number one from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by Phil Noto. Oh, this is a new Jessica Jones mystery, and as you can probably tell from the cover, seems like some weird stuff is potentially going on with different versions of Jessica Jones. We don't quite wholly get into that this issue, though we start to tease it. But in the meantime, we get the status quo for Jessica Jones, what's going on with her, and follow that here. I thought this was great and exactly what I wanted out of a Jessica Jones book. What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, the way that Gail and Phil really captured the vibe of Jessica Jones from the original Bendis Gatos series, it's spot on, while also sort of being a little bit refreshing. It doesn't have as much of the hard-nosed version, like sort of dark clouds always circling her. Because I think since the original series, her life has changed a lot. And so it makes sense that she's a little bit sort of busier. She's a little bit more, a little bit less cynical. And I think this is just a great extension. Phil Noto's art is awesome. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, I Art's Banana's good. This is a real fun take. Great kind of piece for Jessica here. We get to see a lot of like cool parts, what makes her great in different ways. It's really a lot of fun. And the kind of fun reveal at the end, I don't want to spoil, was also very exciting. They do a good job of getting you excited for more. It's a hell of an issue.
You see the cover for the second issue? And this is not necessarily a spoiler, but it's Jessica Jones kissing that daredevil.
Hey, come on, man.
Kissing that daredevil.
Don't spoil it for people.
We'll see what happens. Should be a lot of fun to follow this book. This is great. Very exciting. Let's talk about the end of a series. Batman Catwoman, number 12 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Clay Mann. This is wrapping up this mega series that ostensibly was wrapping up Tom King's run on Batman before it was spun out into its own thing. I know we've been very back and forth about some of the issues involved here, but Pete, as our resident Bat Cat shipper, how did you feel about how this wrapped up?
Holy shit, it finally all happened. We got it. We got what we were kind of like teased back in 2019 with this, the start of this kind of thing. But Clay, man. Holy shit, this is some great stuff here. We get everything in this issue, all the things answered, really amazing, powerful stuff, hilarious. That whole Superman bit was really great. Just an amazing story. This is worth the wait and all the kind of back and forth. Like, this is just really a lot of fun and great to see this side of Batman a little bit. I do love when we get kind of windows inside his relationship with Supes.
I love windows.
Yeah, it's just, that's what panels are. You know what I mean? The combo panels are just windows into people's souls. I'm here for
and their relationship to Supes as a lunch option.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, when you get older, you got to be like, you know what? Let's just make a pact about killing somebody. You know what I mean? Let's just do it.
I love this as well. I think it in a series that like I think everybody was like, this is feels a little all over the place, especially in the middle. It really brought it together in a great way. But I have an issue that I want to talk about on like page. The middle of the comic, it's like page 12 or something. It's a full page spread of Catwoman hugging Bruce, yeah. And he's wearing underwear, and he's wearing boxer briefs. And so the way what we're going with here is he wears boxer briefs, and then he puts on his Batman uniform, which is briefs. He has like the brief. What's the deal? He's wearing boxer briefs underneath and then briefs over top.
This is very similar to when he like puts on a mask and then he pulls off his mask and his Batman mask is under it. That bothers me too.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense. You're going to go all boxer briefs or you're going to go all briefs.
Guys, it's the comic book. Come on, let's be cool about this. All right.
Do you not remember what we do here, sir? We get into the issues that matter.
You can't double brief it. You got to go boxer briefs with a brief. I say you mix and match. You know what I mean?
Do you want to put on tidy whiteys below that so you get like the triple layer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Extra protection. That's what I always say.
Protection? Yeah. What?
You got to get that comfort.
Ladies, stay away.
What?
This is mine.
What just happened? The guy's got a chastity belt.
I'm wondering how much I should poke the bear here with Pete.
I could see the look on your face. You didn't love it.
I'm trying to decide.
I would like to say I was a little disappointed the cover gave things away a little bit. I was a little kind of like, you know, don't give it all away on the cover. You know what I mean? Like covers are fun and great, but like it sucks when a cover spoils a cool reveal.
I think they brought the Mask of the Phantasm, Phantasm Mystery together nicely in here. I'm glad this comic is done. And I respect everybody involved. Love Tom King. I think Clayman is great as well. I really feel like this has been a mess all over the place.
You don't think Mask of the Phantasm had beef with Joker? You don't think that was legit?
No, I said the Phantasm
thing.
That was the one thing I said I liked. But here's the thing that's really going to poke the bear here. My main impression reading this is I am ready to move on from Batman Catwoman, just as a couple entirely.
What are you sick of them? You're already over them?
You don't love?
What this reminded me of. And
you didn't
I think,
like the bat
granted,
package?
So there's a side note here, like not a side note. This is the related note is Tom King is clearly doing his magnum opus, everything that he needs to say about Batman Catwoman. So maybe part of what I'm feeling is like, I'm full. You gave me a full meal. I'm good to go. But my main impression reading this book was I was like, maybe we can figure out a way to end this relationship now. So both of them can move on to other people because I kind of missed
Mephisto.
The idea. Yeah. Like, no. They don't even need to do that. They could just break up and go other directions because part of what I think is interesting about them is not that they're together and tied at the hip all the time, but that they do separate, go to these other people, and always inevitably come back to each other after an amount of time.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite type of relationship, too, is where I'm stressed out all the time about leaving and coming back. It's hard to enjoy any aspect of my life.
But then Batman dates a bunch of other folks. He dates Vicky Vale. He dates – what's the one you like? Not the Silver Sable type, but that's not
Sasha. Yes, yeah, so it's funny. My first thought was Silver Sable. Sasha Bordeaux.
Yeah, there.
Great relationship.
Yeah, there you go. So it gives options. Catwoman has a bunch of flings as well, and hooks up with other people. I don't know.
What's it's your fun. Deal? You hate what marriage? You just
oh,
like,
you have know, an
like,
open marriage over
yeah,
here?
Yeah. What? You don't want someone to be tied down with somebody? I thought.
No, I have a closed marriage. I think I explained about the three pairs of underwear I wear. That, Keeps everybody right.
It's very close. It's close. It's extremely close.
No, thanks.
It's one. Down to well, one.
I can't believe that you thought that was explaining your marriage to us, but okay.
All you need to know about me, I wear three pairs of underwear every day.
Oh, yeah. That answers all my questions about
Case
you.
Case closed. Let's move on to talk about Public Domain number one from Image Comics by Chip Zdarsky. This is another book I'm very hesitant to spoil because almost the whole point of the book comes at the end. A lot of this is laying groundwork for where we're going to be going in the series, but basically what you need to know about it is it's about a, we don't know exactly the powers, but like imagine the two guys who created Superman had a falling out back in the day. One of them still really loves the character and makes no money off of it. The other one hates the character and makes tons of money off of it. And so, the like, latest Superman type movie is coming out. In the middle of it, the artist, the one who still loves the character, has two sons who are semi-estranged ahead on different paths. And all of these characters start to rotate and revolve around each other before there's some big changes by the end of the first issue. Very inside baseball, but so
this, that's what I was gonna say. Oh yes. Whoa. I'm a shortstop essentially. When it comes to baseball, I do think this book is written for it's like a fantasy for comic book creators essentially. I think it's cool. Like, I like it. I think the story, the where it ends up at the end of the first issue is interesting, but I'm curious where it goes from here. To me, it could easily be one more issue and be like, got it. But I do think it's going to continue to branch out into different areas, and I'm curious. It's going to get so wonky, I feel like. So I'm curious. And Chip Zdarsky is a great writer, so I'm sure he can find new areas to explore, like he's been doing in his Daredevil run. But I'm curious where that is in a world that is very much set inside the specifics of Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, I've got hope that this is going to be better than real life, because we all know in real life the artist gets ripped off and gets no money and no love. So I'm hoping we're going to go in a different direction. But unlike you, Justin, I'm not going to attack Chip Zdarsky and you call this stuff, you're like, this is going to get wobbly. I would never say that.
Said
about
wonky.
His... Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
And I mean that in that it's going to get too very specific into details, like policy wonk if you're talking about politics.
Okay. I guess I don't know what wonky means, but anyways,
like Willy Wonky.
I didn't appreciate the negative connotations you were putting on Chip Zdarsky's work. I don't think he deserves any of that. And
I was actually very positive about him, if you remember one second ago.
Okay, well, I didn't listen. I just heard the word wonky, and I was like, that's negative, and I don't like it. But I think this is a cool premise, and it gives me hope. I'm hoping that, like Ted Lasso, this will have a positive spin on a story that we know all too well. And if we're talking about inside baseball, I guess I would be an announcer commenting on a sport that has always been a little too out of my reach.
Let me just throw out there for the listener, if you don't know this, you can add like Ted Lasso to the beginning of any sentence that Pete says on this podcast and in real life. So feel free to just imagine that right before Pete.
Guilty talks. As charged.
I completely hear what both of you guys are saying. I really like this a lot. I thought it's great seeing Chip Zdarsky on art again, something that we haven't seen for a little bit since Sex Criminals. He's got little humorous bits throughout there. I don't think I really appreciated all of his derogatory names for geek-friendly like podcasts and stuff who are doing interviews. That was a pretty abysmal part of
great
the book,
runner.
To be honest.
Oh, wow. Dude. Come okay? on. Wow.
But wow. No, it was very funny. And the whole thing is very funny. I'm very curious to see where it goes because, like you said, Justin, I do think he is going to get very in the weeds here about this stuff. But at the same time, it's a situation that's going to spiral out of control in potentially big ways. And I think there's a lot of creativity that could happen there and I think will happen there.
Sometimes the weeds is a great place to be. It's where the frogs are.
There you go.
Okay.
Buffy 97, number one from Boom Studios, written by Jeremy Lambert, art by Mariana Ignasi. This is, as the title says, taking it back to Buffy's roots. We're getting a tale of them going to the mall and getting sucked into a magazine. Like we've talked about with a lot of these Buffy books, this is one that actually pretty much has the classic characters and classic situations. So I know you guys have been very iffy about the remixes here, including one that we're going to talk about later on in the podcast. But what did you think about this issue?
I thought this was fun. I felt like they did a good job of like kind of setting up the kind of pace of this and the kind of bits. So I appreciate it. It was easy to kind of follow and understand. And that zombie kind of quarter looking villain was freaking me out. But other than that, the kind of the magical kind of bad lady was pretty cool.
I like this a lot, too. Of all the Buffy sort of expanded universe books we're getting, this one had such a strong take and such a strong art take, which I really liked. And the format sort of played out like a fashion magazine, because that was the content they were dealing with, or like a classic Archie Double Digest issue, where it was like a lot of spreads where you're seeing just silent panels of the characters or their friends in cool clothes hanging out. And it was a nice tonal use of that. So I thought it was cool. And the story was creepy in a good way.
Yeah. Iron Cat, number one from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Per Perez. In this issue, we are picking back up on one of Justin's favorite comic books.
Yes.
The Black Cat tries to solve a new mystery of who is in the Iron Cat armor with some twists there. Justin, take it away.
I love Jed McKay's sort of mini universe of Black Cat, and I think he finds ways to continually expand and go in different directions, build this mythology.
Tell you what, dogs don't like cats.
Wait, is Pip Don't Slip like giving her own review in the background? Is that what's up?
Yeah, there's like, you know, dogs and people, they don't know, they just want to have their opinion known. Mm-hmm. Cats. But as I was saying, like, and this adds like some nice past stuff and Black Cat's relationship to Black Fox and a new character. And then touching off on the continuity where Black Cat has been messing with Iron Man lately and stealing from him and seeing that come through. It's just a really smartly written. It's fun. It's funny. It's got the great criminal theft angles. It's just, if you haven't checked this out, I recommend picking up really any issue in the run.
I agree with what Justin was saying. It's really smart, the twists and turns and the intertwining of characters. And it was fun moment where Black Cat's like, what's that got to do with me and what I'm doing right now? And then that fun reveal. Great times.
Next up, The Swamp Thing, number 14 from DC Comics, written by Ram V, art by Mike Perkins. In this issue, The Swamp Thing has gone to space with Green Lantern while down on Earth. The new machine, I'm forgetting what it's called, but basically, like, there's the red, the green, and now there's the machines, are starting a big war there with the Avatar of the Green. This is the sort of trippy, crazy shit that I want from Swamp Thing that makes it feel yes. like old school Vertigo. Love this issue.
Agree completely. Like I think this Rambi series has been so good. It's a limited series. It's like sort of a countdown that's stressed, like a Spawn style countdown that's stressing me out because I really love it. I want it to keep going. And they added some issues from its original numbering. So here's hoping we get more and more of it because I think it's great.
I don't want to poke the bear here on this one, but again, the cover gave things away, which I didn't appreciate. It was a lot of, Green Lantern and my Swamp Thing, which, you know, also I was like,
They're green friends, but
don't fucking yuck my yum, you know what I mean, with too much of your Green Lantern bullshit. But I did appreciate the space dust guy who just kind of like walked away from Green Lantern and was like turned into space dust, because that's how I feel like as soon as one person starts going off about Green Lantern. So that was kind of like, I would like to
live. You turned to space dust?
Yeah, it would be nice if someone was just kind of going, no, it's great about Green Lantern, and I could just kind of step off into the air and just kind of turn into space dust, you know what I mean?
You know what you're going to start doing is you wear three pairs of underwear. Really protects you from people trying to talk to you about Green Lantern. You know what I'm talking about? Sins of the Black
Flamingo. Are you trying to have any more kids, Alex? Because I wouldn't.
It's been hard so far. Sins of the Black Flamingo, number one from Image Comics, written by Andrew Wheeler, art by Travis Moore. In this issue, we meet a gentleman thief type character who is stealing magical relics, sometimes for good, sometimes for not quite so good. But as you might expect, he gets embroiled in something much, much bigger than him. I didn't know what to expect going into this issue, and I came out loving it. I thought it was so good, so smart, so funny. The art by Travis Moore is amazing.
So good.
One of my favorites of the week.
I really like this as well. I feel like you get there's a fair number of books that are like, and the main character is a charming thief, and then you read about it, and you're like, this guy sucks. And in this comic, they do such a great job of making our main character like super charming, super fun. And then I like how just committed to the sort of magic, mystical side of it the book is, in such a way where they don't have to be like, so here's the type of magic that this person does. It's based on this, blah, blah, and then it just is like, nope, she's doing some magic over here. And like, very coolly written.
I mean, I agree. It's very coolly written. It's very slick. There's a lot of hot naked dudes in here. So, you know, what's not to like?
There you go. Help, that did not go the direction that I thought it was going to go based on your attitude. All right. Hellboy
and the BPRD. Feels a little scratchety.
Hellboy and the BPRD, Old Man Whittier, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola, art by Gabriel Hernandez-Walta. This is another one-shot tale of Hellboy this time, as he explores a mysterious mansion that may be tied to a case that he explored back in the day. Pete, you're our Hellboy boy. Talk about it.
Hellboy boy.
Boy, boy.
Yeah. This was just classic Hellboy fun. I love this. This was just so great. It was fun to see Hellboy talk shit to these creepy old ghosts and people and, right the wrongs. I love this. I love this kind of like Hellboy just kind of walking around, helping things out, releasing ghosts and all that kind of stuff. And that like last bit he did at the panel, I fell out laughing. This is just amazing art, amazing kind of character-driven story. What's not to love?
You ever talk shit to ghosts?
No, I don't have. I'm not going to fucking start talking shit to ghosts. You're out of your mind.
I'm just saying the snakes seem pretty easy to handle. They weren't even poisonous.
Yeah, I thought those were great. I love these Hellboy one shots. They're very, very fun.
When we reviewed the last one, I was like, why can't we just do this all the time? And then now it seems like here comes some more of them. They're some of the most casual storytelling in comics right now, where it's just like, he's like, I don't know about this house. And he's like, I'm going to go in this other door. And then he's like, oh, here's the problem. And then he's like, then we solved it. And then he's like, here's a little joke on the way out. Like, it's just so chill.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Now, why don't we move on?
It's like Yacht Rock for comics.
Oh, come on, dude. Don't you undercut
it's
the
easy
fucking...
listening. I'm not. It's easy
you,
listening.
Man. No, fuck
people
you.
People love Yacht Rock. Don't worry about it. Don't dude, yuck their yum.
You
right,
love
Pete?
Yacht Rock.
I don't know if that's Yacht true. Rock. I don't know if that's true or not, but the point is, like,
you don't know
don't undercut all the creativity and amazing stuff that is in this comic.
I just said it was like Yacht Rock.
That's a slap in the face.
People had to try hard to make those songs that are like chill and fun.
Don't give this a Greg Pak kick in the pants, bro. You were
when Greg Pak says that, he means it's a positive.
Sometimes.
Nope. Okay. We're going to move on because we have a sponsor for this week's episode. It is Worlds Away. Worlds Away is the last god meets Radiant Black. Set in a futuristic universe, Worlds Away number one separates itself from the pack by blending high octane sci-fi action in a fantastical archaic setting, all glued together by a story of a mother who will stop at nothing to protect her daughter. It's makes a sense. Spellbinding 22-page issue filled with thrilling action sequences, grounded by intense and sometimes brutal character moments and decisions. At the end of Worlds Away in number one, readers will be on the edge of their seats, itching to know what dangers await our characters. Created by Damian Becton, sixth grade English teacher and 2021 winning comic writer of Mad Cave Studios' annual talent search, Worlds Away is now live on Kickstarter. Go to worldsawaycomic.com or search Worlds Away number one on Kickstarter right now.
Not part of the ad, but that sounds cool.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Why don't we move on to some other comics, though? Captain America, Symbol of Truth, number 2 from Marvel, written by Tochi Onibuchi and art by R.B. Silva. In this issue, Sam Wilson is still on search for a bunch of super soldier serum, I believe is what's going on here. Whatever it is, he's having a fun time with Deadpool. That's the basic idea.
Yeah. What a fun, odd couple team up. I mean, I didn't know I needed this in my life, but now I do, and I'm very happy it exists. This is cool. Why not? Yeah. Hell fucking yeah, man.
Well, and I feel like this is something we just aren't getting until now with the Sam Wilson Cap, is just sort of a regular Cap story. Like, I feel like Sam Wilson's story is always tied up in a larger thing, or are in a particular direction. This is just some fun, and it's a team up. It feels like Sam Wilson is the Cap of the Marvel Universe when you read this book.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed this as well. Next up, Action Comics number 1044 from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Ricardo Federici and Will Conrad and David Lapham. In the front story, Superman is continuing his fight against Mongol and Warworld with some surprising results by the end of the issue. We also got a backup story here showing on what's going on with the rest of the Super Family back on Earth. Pete, I believe you were pretty jazzed about this one. Want to talk about it?
I was super jazz hands about it. This is a lot of fun. This is great. Philip Kennedy Johnson is killing this. This is PJ. The art is beyond bananas good. It's I love how intense this is. I love
hold
all
on.
The action.
What's beyond bananas? You walk into the supermarket, you see bananas, you're like, this is a great part
we
of the
must go further. Excuse me, produce boy. We must produce go further than these bananas. Thing. Take me. Then he's like, you mean plantains, sir? Let go of my shirt. Plantain's good. This artist plantain's good.
Anyways, I really think that this is just a fucking great package, man. This is just such a must pickup right now. I don't know what you're doing, but fucking get this comic.
Wow. What are you doing?
What are you doing? Get the comic.
Pete, the father of us all when it comes to telling us how to get this comic. I wonder when this book was originally pitched. I feel like it was like going to take some of the stuff from The Last God and really bring it to Superman. But I wonder if everyone is as cognizant of the fact that Philip Kennedy Johnson was going to be able to like unearth all this great, like real Superman, like purity and wholesomeness that he is just highlighting in every issue of this book, while also showing this wild alien adventure. This is just a landmark run. I really hope this gets held up as a really great true Superman story.
I agree. And knowing that Superman is going to be returning to Earth sooner rather than later, I don't remember the exact schedule there, I'm very curious to see how this keeps going as well. Like, this is definitely cresting up to a big place, but what will happen beyond that? What will the ramifications be? Very interested to check it all out. Next up, Ghost Cage, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Nick Jurgoda and Caleb Gollner, art by Nick Jurgoda. It certainly seems like the last issue of this series, potentially.
Definitely
about
does.
A bunch of folks fighting their way up a smokestack and fighting various monsters. Pete, this was one of your favorites of the week.
It was. I love the art style on this book. It is just so fantastic. And, you know, as somebody who is worried about ghosts, we got to come up with something.
Stop talking shit to them, dude.
We need... Stop talking shit. Never. That was you. We need some kind of cage. We need some kind of, you know, entrapment unit, something for these ghosts. And I'm glad that, you know, it's comics like this exploring these ideas. No, but I really think that the action, the anime kind of style of this is just a really great... a very cool looking, unbelievable book. And I love the black and white feel, the grittiness.
You're saying these ghosts need to be busted.
That's right.
And because busted makes me feel good. Yeah.
Busted makes me feel good. Great. Yeah. Glad we got there. I mean, if you're a fan of the book East Meets West, East of West. This not only has Nick DeGroda's art that is very much in the same style, it is like right next door to that book in a good way. Like it has a similar story, like big storytelling,
yeah, like
characters
neighbor,
on a journey.
Like somebody you want to visit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
Great stuff. Why don't we move on to a definite last issue, which is Seven Secrets, number 18 from Boom Studios, written by Tom Taylor, art by Danielle DiNicolo. In this issue, not only do we have the finale here, we find out what the secrets are the whole time.
All seven?
All seven, and big revelations of how it all ends. Without spoiling that, I want to throw out to you, and I don't know if you guys had the same experience, but what I was really struck by with this issue, and this is mildly skirting spoilers, but it reminded me of sometimes doing like really huge play sessions as a kid with other kids where you're like riffing off of stuff, and you start with like, well, I have these two action figures, and it ends up being like, and here's how this guy created the universe, and this other guy is the evil guy in the universe, and they're gonna fight, and it's for everything, and all the other action figures are gonna stand there and they're gonna watch this awesome fight, and it's gonna be so cool. And I like that, so I enjoyed this issue.
Yeah, what you just described, Alex, is any improv set. I think Pete and I have some experience doing that because it did really build out to like some big revelations that I think we had no idea the connections were going to be as strong and surprising as they were in the end. Like a great, satisfying improv show when they the performers can really bring it all together in a creative way, and that's what this book did.
Yeah, I love the callbacks.
Thanks, Pete. Pete, you can lean into the microphone.
Fully in another
it's
room.
It's not going to bite you. It's not going to bite your nose off.
Thanks.
She-Hulk number 4 from Marvel, written by Rainbow Rowell, art by Luca Baresca. In this issue, She-Hulk is continuing to grapple with her identity issues, as well as what's been going on with Jack of Hearts and setting up her new law practice. Very fun visuals in this issue. There's a bunch of stuff with a bunch of heroes coming to visit her law office that I thought was so fun.
Very fun.
I have a blast reading this. And like I say, every issue, I just need more of it every time. But then they keep bringing more out. So it's all good.
Yeah, they're having a lot of fun with this. They're having fun with the little Fight Club references. And yeah, this is just great. This is just continues to not only give us more in She-Hulk's life and what she's doing, but it's doing it in such a fun way that kind of like really gets you excited to learn more about this character and how she's going to handle this world that she is treading in. So very exciting. Art is fantastic. This is cool.
Agree with all that. Great art, great story, fun character.
Batman Fortress number 2 from DC Comics, written by Gary Whitta, art by Derek Robinson. A alien armada is invading Earth, or at least one ship is invading Earth. Superman is missing, and the Justice League is trying to find out what's going on. I'll tell you what, I was surprised about this issue, and part of the reason I was surprised, despite the fact that Derek Robinson's art is always great, I thought the concept was, what if Batman had to go up against an alien invasion all by himself, which is kind of what we got in the first issue. And the second issue was like, and here's the Justice League.
Well, exactly, because I think the first issue was like, because we didn't even get that in the first issue. The first issue was like, well, I guess I'm going to have to do this alone. And this year she was like, by calling all my friends in and doing it. And I was like, that didn't go super well. I guess I'm going to do this alone. And I'm like, next issue, what's going to happen?
Yeah, I don't know. But are you still enjoying this, Pete?
Yeah, I think this is fun, this whole kind of like intense alien attacks thing. Super convenient for Superman not to be there. What's going on with that guy? But I'm excited to see what happens next.
What's the first? Yeah, go ahead.
Just one other thing. Like the way that everyone sort of got taken down in this issue, and Batman was like, oof. We did not do a good job there. I was like, huh, not really.
Weird reaction.
The emotional reaction I was expecting. He was like hanging out with Alfred, being like, we sort of blew that.
Ooh, man, that was rough.
Weird stuff. Yeah. What's the furthest place from here? Number 7 from Image Comics, written by Josh Hickson and Matthew Rosenberg, art by Tyler Boss. In this issue, we are flashing back to the beginning of whatever happened to this world that seems to just have kids. We actually see some grown-ups this issue, as well as a lot more about what's going on. So this is a big revelation issue. What'd you guys think about this
one? I mean, as you guys have kids, this has got to be the dream, right? just somebody goes and takes your kids and puts them in some kind of candy land place where they can just go and hang out with each other. And you guys can go and, you know, like work your jobs and take care of things and you know, live your life.
Yeah,
you
it doesn't exactly go to my seem candy to be place. What's happening because the adults are getting torn apart and eaten, I think.
Well, sure. Yeah, there's that yeah. side.
I wouldn't love that part.
Well, you wouldn't sacrifice your kids so they could have a Candyland adventure and just eat.
Not if it's up. My death, man.
Oh, really? Wow. That's
well, that's selfish. Sort of what parenting is, Alex, when you think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
We're slowly sacrificing. We're slowly being
tree.
Eaten by
it's
our
a
lives.
Tree. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think about this
I'm
one,
almost
Justin,
out of apples.
As a parent?
Well, let me say, the this could have been the first issue of this comic. I feel like if you start at the – this is definitely the beginning of sort of the story. But I got to give – like the way that this – the series has played out as this sort of – we don't know what's happening or why, but we're just following these characters and we get caught up with it. And then to jump back and really give us the deep dive, I think is cool. And it's a surprising way to do it, though.
I really like this one quite a bit. Tyler Bross's art, as always, is awesome. Next up,
scary.
Here's what I was way wrong about. I thought it ended. It didn't. Berserker number 9 for Boom Studios, written by Keanu Reeves and Matt Kidd, art by Ron Gardy. In this issue, our main Berserker finally comes back to Earth with devastating results. Pete, you love a good fight.
Sure do, buddy. I thought there was more you were going to say there, but no, all right. No. So, yeah.
I thought my brain shut down.
The action on this is just glorious. There's
Ron Garney.
A lot. Yeah, I mean, come on. The Garney is no joke. I mean, there's some stuff where I'm not sure what's happening, but I'm still having a great time because of all the action. Yes, please, of this team. Anything you guys want to do, I am there for. It's an unbelievable team. And it's nice to see somebody, you know, just lose their fucking mind and start tearing things apart. You know what I mean? Like, what a life.
Yeah, that Pete's dream. Keep kissing the Garney stone on this one because I think this art is fantastic.
Excellent. Why don't we, talk about The Avengers number 57 from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron, art by Javier Garan. The Avengers are headed back in time throughout not their history, but different Avengers throughout history in order to combat different Mephistos throughout the multiverse who have all banded together. Here they're finding a Sorcerer Supreme who operated in World War II for a pretty fun done in one adventure that'll probably come back at some point as Jason Aaron continues to tell this mega story. Justin, what did you think about this one?
Jason Aaron, I've made this point a bunch, but the Jason Aaron's Avengers run, it's just like, and I say this sounds like lame, but I say it as a compliment. It's like wild freeform jazz where you're like, just like, it feels like he's just moving through Avengers, all the Avengers sort of continuity and just pulling in elements and finding new ways to use them. I just want to read the first line of this comic. In the necro bazaars of Algiers, word is that Hitler has himself a new secret weapon. Big swing out of the gate, and it only gets crazier with more and more wild specifics. The reveal of the Soldier Supreme is so satisfying. It's a character we just met in this issue.
Holy so cool. Beans and weenies, this is a lot of fun. This is just a lot of really cool moments. Jason Aaron just having a blast, and I'm even though there's more Mephistos than I would ever like in a comic, I'm still enjoying it. So, I mean, it's got to be good.
I'm just going to throw out a theory to you guys, if you're ready. I think Pete said beans and weenies because beans sounds like bananas and weenies are long and thin like bananas are. Is that right, Pete?
Ooh.
I was quoting the comic back to you guys.
Oh, okay.
No, I think that's the new catchphrase. Like Ted Lasso, that's a great catchphrase.
Oh my God. It is. And they eat bangers and mash and like beans on toast and stuff over there. So that's a Ted Lasso right there. DC versus Vampires, Killers number 1 from DC Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg, art by Mike Bowden.
Said it ahead.
Eduardo. I know. That's really threw me, Eduardo Mello. In this issue, we're catching up with the world where vampires have taken over. Harley Quinn and Catwoman don't want anything to do with it. They just want to do their crime. And as usual, they can't because they get sucked back into it by Jim Gordon. Pete, I know you're really beans and weenieing about this issue. What'd you think?
Yeah, I think it's one of those, like, first off, Bergie is killing the game. Anytime I see Bergie's name attached to something, I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to read it. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, like, holy crap, Harley Quinn's in everything. But if it's amazing, I don't care. And this is just a great example of that. Like, when Jim Gordon shows up and she calls him Jeff, I fell out.
I think
out.
It's Jeff,
like,
Gordon, yeah.
There. Yeah, I fucking fell out when she's like, Jeff! And it's like, so everybody knows it's fucking Jim Gordon. Just so funny. Like, that's what's so fun about the Harley Quinn character is these kind of fun bits that you can do and still have it be like badass and kind of fit this DC mold. Yeah, this just seems completely intense and insane. And it's nice to have Bergie at the helm kind of leading us through it. So hells to the motherfucking yeah.
I mean, across the board, I think we've said this DC versus vampires event is plantains good. So more of that, please.
The Department of Truth, number 19 from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Martin Simmons. In this issue, we're getting some big plot stuff is going down as our main character finds out more about the Department of Truth. There's some big, huge movements by the end that I don't want to spoil from the enemy. If they are the enemy, it's not 100% clear. But I know there's, like, I mention this every time with this book, but, like, there's been a lot of info dump type issues, which are really smart and they're well structured and well written. But when it gets to the plot like this, this book hums. It kills it. And it's so dangerous and scary and nerve wracking to read. Love it.
I agree. I love this book. I was watching this, I was reading this today while January 6th hearing was on, and I was like, is this the same? Am I, like, in and out of reality here? Like, it just felt like realities were combining in a way that I was like, that's how sort of prescient and on it this book is, and I love it.
And that's when the mushrooms kicked in. Yeah, this book is straight up gorgeous. It's really just unbelievable paneling and such a creepy and amazing use of the American flag in this comic. Just continues to impress. Just when I think, like, oh, okay, I get an understanding of what's going on, they're kind of bringing fresh ideas. So it's creepy in all the right ways and is very intriguing. Every issue is kind of like a must pick up.
The Vampire Slayer, number 3 from Boob Studios, written by Sarah Galley, art by Michael Shelfer. As I mentioned earlier, this is one of those remixes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Here, taking place in a world where Willow has become the Vampire Slayer instead of Buffy. There's a lot of other big changes with the other characters. Specifically, we catch up with Xander here, who is having issues with his boyfriend. I think, if I remember correctly, we were a little iffy on the first issue, but we all really dug the second issue. And this is from the same creator from Buffy the Last Vampire Slayer, which was one of the better Buffy books. So how do you feel this held up in issue number 3? Was it more like issue number 1 or more like issue number 2?
We're to silently say 2.
Don't register what you say. Just hold up your fingers.
Hey, well, I was just giving you nonverbal cues that I'm ready to talk if you wanted to go to me or if you want to throw it to Justin.
Pete. I thought you were like, I would like to go second. I'm second in line.
Give Peace
a chance.
This is a lot of fun. The whole worm thing was a lot of fun. Yeah, this was cool. And, you know, it's stuff like this that makes me think maybe it should have been Willow the whole time. You know what I mean? Yeah, great art, fun character stuff. It's I like the back and forth and the banter. This is a great comic.
This comic feels the most like the Buffy TV show, early seasons of the TV show, where we've just eliminated Buffy. There's a reason the book is called The Vampire Slayer. No Buffy in the title. No Buffy in the book. And it's just everybody else doing their thing.
Just to clarify, Buffy is in the book, but she's a regular human. She doesn't have Vampire Slayer powers.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah, right. But we don't have time for regular humans. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is great. Like Pete said, there's this whole bit with Xander is dealing with relationship issues. So an enormous worm monster comes in and just wants to talk about its feelings. It's so funny. I wish that was the entire issue.
But I agree.
That back and forth was just so much fun. Completely nailed it. And then even if the rest of the bit, which is this new version of Spike hanging out with Xander, is not quite the high of that worm monster, it's still a lot of fun and the dynamic is really good. I'm really enjoying this and I'm excited to see where it goes. Moving on to A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance, number 9 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Andre Lima Arrojo, picking up on the huge cliffhanger of the last issue, or not at all, actually, as we jump ahead with both of our main characters, this dude who seems mostly unkillable and his young ward are very much alive and okay. They've escaped their ordeal and are living the life, eating shrimp tacos.
Getting some great tacos.
Oh, man, those tacos look so good.
The most horrible thing you can imagine comes for them, his mom.
Well, that's the last page reveal of it being his mom has come to visit. I was like, this is going to be some horrible killer or something, and maybe she will be. But that was a fun twist in an issue that like was building tension the whole time because they were having too good of a time.
Too good of a time. For Rick Remender stuff, that's a kiss of death. That's what makes me think that they're already dead, because you can't eat tacos like that twice. You know what I mean? Like, that's just a once and then you die type of taco.
That's your James Bond movie, right? You can't eat tacos like that twice.
Yeah.
I can't wait to read the script.
Yeah. Anyways, I just feel that like this was just
Pete, did both of your headphones just fall out?
He can't hear anything.
Yeah, one of his headphones fell out and he just kept talking. And then the other headphone would fall out and he just kept talking.
Yeah, it's been a nightmare. Just doing it the whole show.
It's your ears are closing up. You got tiny, tiny tubes.
This is great. Let's move on to talk about Pearl number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Michael Begatos. I think we talked about this, Justin, on an episode where it was just the two of us, though I could be wrong.
Yes.
But this is just picking up on the old series that the two of them created together about a young Yakuza leader. This was, to be upfront, very frustrating to me because the first issue ended with this big cliffhanger that felt like, here we go. And then in classic Bendis fashion, it was like, that already happened a while ago. And we'll flash back to it a little bit later, but we're going to just talk about the aftermath. So characterization is still really good. Some awesome art and sequences from Michael Gatos, but I want this book to get to something personally.
Well, and it feels like it's almost purposefully not, because the first issue, I think we were like, what is this? It's a bunch of like people hanging out and talking about stuff that we don't really know about as a first issue. And sure, I know it's the third volume of this, but it felt like very much like not talking about anything. Then something crazy happened in this issue. I actually like this issue better because at least the conversations I thought were good. The conversation between Pearl and the FBI agent I thought was a great like sort of noir-y back and forth about someone avoiding saying something and putting out a fake persona at the same time. That was a cool scene, I thought. But yes, I do want like just like some narrative with a full line through it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I agree. I think that this is very intriguing. The art's fantastic. It really sets up this kind of noir feel. But I'm concerned about this this lady's tattoos that seem to like sometimes appear, but then sometimes aren't there.
You didn't think she didn't pay full price for them.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's like a whole nother generation of tattoos that is like almost like a mood ring that only shows up when like shit gets real. You know what I mean?
That's like you have a mood beard. It only appears when you're angry.
Yeah. Last but not least, as mentioned, this was our request this week from a nice, crisp Espinette. It is Silver Surfer Requiem from Marvel, written by J. Michael Straczynski, art by Asad Ribic. This is a 4-issue miniseries where, you can figure this out from the title, but Silver Surfer finds out that he is going to die, and over the course of 4 issues, takes a tour of the Marvel Universe. I definitely remember reading this back in the day, but I didn't remember any of the details of it. But what did you guys think, either revisiting this or checking this out for the first time?
This, I loved it when it came out initially, and I loved rereading it. Like, the Asad Ribic art is so good. It's so, like, Marvel Masterworks trading card style art, which is really cool. And it is perfectly paired with sort of the high drama, high melodrama, big storytelling that J. Michael Straczynski is doing here. It's hard to fully remember that JMS was, like, a huge deal for so long, and he is a great comic writer. I don't want to get into some of the other things he's done in his life, which can be not as good, but and this story is great. I think the Silver Surfer is one of the best Marvel characters to tell a big, like, emotional story with, because he's such a blank slate who is, like, highly emotional but also completely unemotional at the same time.
Pete, what about you? What'd you
think? The fucking art, man. Every fucking panel is just beautiful, like, absolutely gorgeous. When this comic was brought up, and I was like, oh, I remember. The only thing that kept coming to my mind was, like, I remember it being beautiful. I remember it being, like, artistically an achievement. And then going back and revisiting it, it's tough because now, you know, I'm not sure what's going on with the writer, but if that something isn't cool, that's not cool. But this is just a great combination of, like, the sacrifice that Silver Surfer is making for all of us. And, like, it's doing it in such a deep, beautiful way that it was like, I was so happy that we had to reread this because it was really very moving.
The thing that I thought was actually really interesting about revisiting this series is JMS, despite, like you're saying, Justin, being one of the bigger writers of this period in Marvel Comics, is, and even the fact that, like, he tends to build these enormous mythologies, is a very grounded writer. Like, he always gives a very ground level thing. So,
yeah.
It was surprising to me to see him on Silver Surfer. It isn't necessarily what I'd expect, but I do think his execution plays to its strengths. To the detriment of the comic is definitely too strong because I really like this book across the board. But the first issue, Silver Surfer is going to the Fantastic Four and dealing with that, makes total sense. And by the end of that issue, I was like, okay, here we go. He's found out he's dead. He's dealt with the Fantastic Four, which are his iconic pairing. Now we're going to see him do this tour of the universe, and it's going to expand outward as it goes. And then the second issue is like, and here I am still on Earth, now hanging out with Spider-Man, which JMS was the Spider-Man writer, so I understand why Spider-Man was in there. But that was the issue that, like, even though I loved bits in it that I thought were so wonderful, felt like a little bit of a waste of the issue's length. I don't know, whatever word you'd use there, because it isn't until issue 3 that he goes and explores space. And then issue 4, spoiler, though you can figure this out, he ends up in Zedla and there's Galactus and all of those things. So it felt like those bookends really made a lot of sense to me. Issue 3 made a lot of sense to me. Issue 2 was the one that felt like, hey, you got to get Spider-Man in there for the sales, because I don't, have they ever hung out? Like, has there ever been a connection with him? Probably,
but
because
it seemed like he was on his way out, and he saw
you
some
can come
trouble
into the
happening.
Mic. You can come into the mic, dude.
He was on his way out, and he saw the trouble happening, and he was like, you know what, instead of flying around universe, you know what, I need to help. And that was kind of like the bigger thing, where it was like he was going to kind of go on this ride for him and have one last kind of hurrah with everything. But then this kind of thing that, you know, caught his attention and kind of derailed his journey became something bigger in itself. So, like, yeah, I mean, the whole MJ moment was unbelievable. Like,
maybe this was the coloring and the version that I read. Did it look like after MJ did her Vision Quest thing with Silver Surfer, when she came back, she was Gwen Stacy?
What, dude?
I read the Kindle version, and there must have been some weird coloring, because there's a moment you only see her lying in Spider-Man's arms, and it's a blonde lady with a headband.
Okay. All right. All right.
MJ, which is very strange. Right,
now I'm going to fucking have to go through this here. You guys riff here. I'm
all going right, absolutely. I guess my point is, I thought on its own, it's a beautiful Silver Surfer Spider-Man story. I just wish it wasn't the second issue of the book.
That's She's got the fucking headband and the thing before.
Okay.
When she rolls in.
Okay.
I get you. Like, if this was a longer series, it would have made more sense to have a full hang Spidey.
And her hair is not any lighter when she comes back, bro. Don't put your shit on shit. You know what I mean? Don't bring your baggage.
I just think this book is garbage, and the second issue in particular. That's what I'm
saying. Oh, my God, dude.
No, I thought it was great. It's well worth reading. Thank you. I definitely am going to drink a crisp Aspinet in your honor later on.
We have to. We all have to.
Absolutely. Thank you for the suggestion. If you would like to suggest something, Apple Podcasts, leave a reading, leave a comment. We'll get to it. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Like Ted Lasso, good night.